Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
But quite clearly you're wrong.
He stands between me and any trouble I'm causing.
You worms, that you. Don't chicken lips me. Interesting to talk about for change.
Do you know how many margaritas I had in Vegas last year?
Do you?
Don't you yawn. Do not yawn. Well, welcome to Hills Radio 88.9 FM. We're here and we're rugged up and the hills are looking a little bit precarious with the rains. Apparently there is rain forecast from the west heading north and flood warnings are on the agenda again. So everyone be prepared, which is, it's a bit unfortunate that's hitting so quickly after the last downpour, Lee.
Thank you, weather girl.
I was offered that job once in Tassie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I failed miserably when I went for the audition.
How did you go wrong?
Just speaking. Anyway, coming up on the show today, we have the great man Phil Hoffman from Phil Hoffman Travel. Not actually to talk about any offers of travel, more about the man. We want to know how Phil became the man he is today, the awards he's gotten for his travel, but how did he get here? It's always interesting to see someone that becomes successful where they started. We've also, parents, be aware you could be sued for all those beautiful little baby pics that you're putting on Facebook. Yes, I said sued. And ghost apps, had no idea what they were. Apparently either did Lee, and we're going to bring you up to date on that. But first, from Lee and I, congratulations to Harndorf.
Oh, yeah.
Back-to-back grand finalists in the Hills Football League. You absolutely sunk dear old Torrens Valley.
I think they'd still be celebrating. I haven't seen them around the town, but I reckon they wouldn't be too hard to find.
I actually warned my daughter about going to the city on the weekend, because I said there are so many grand final football events and there'll be people that lost and there'll be people that won and they'll all be celebrating pretty much the same way with elbow to mouth, isn't it?
And let's not just restrict that to footballers too, because I know the netballers are all finishing up at the moment as well.
I know.
And they're all out there doing the same thing, so it's party town.
Listen, it was scary enough telling her to be avoiding the boys, let alone the girls, huh? And also, I've got to say, Bridgewater Callington, you must be celebrating more than anyone. You won by 3 points over Nairn Bremmer, and it's the first time you've won the flag in 3 decades.
So who was that?
That was Bridgewater Callington, the Raiders.
Okay.
And they beat the Rams, Nairn Bremmer, by 3 points for the Bees.
Mm.
My boy didn't do so well.
He didn't win?
No.
How many is that in a row for him?
Five.
That's
five
tough.
Grand
it's
finals.
Tough, but as Graham Corns says, the more you lose, the closer you are to winning.
Five, Lee.
Yeah,
my heart broke. The poor old kid. St. Peter's College, old scholars beat him, but they looked like a team of under-18s compared to Sam's lot. They were a little bit older.
Mm. And also your Crows went down, Adelaide Football Club went down. It's been a good weekend for you, has it?
Yeah, the Crows went down. Actually, I have got some good news. And the news is that one, Nathan Van Berlo, had a little baby. He didn't personally have it. Jesse's wife had it. Had Sarah last night at 9:25 p.m. A beautiful, healthy young woman, a young girl, Sarah May Van Berlo, 8 pounds 3 ounces. I'm telling you what, Jess, that's a pretty good start.
That's a big baby to be pushing out.
We won't go into deep this, but anyway, congratulations to Nathan and Jess on the safe arrival of young Sarah.
Now, speaking of the starting block, they also had the City to Bay on the weekend.
You've done that, haven't you?
I've done that. It's a really good, fun event. But this is what amazes me. The Tom Middleton was the fellow that won it overall. He did it in 39 minutes, 13 seconds. Now, 12 kilometres. What that means is he's running at 3 minutes 25 per kilometre. That's phenomenally fast.
He's an Olympian, isn't he?
I can't sprint half of that.
Is that an Olympian?
I don't know.
I think he's an Olympian.
And the girl who got the fastest lady come in at 48.05, and she's done it in 4 minute kilometres. And that's still a terrific pace to be running at.
It would take me that long just to arrive.
Yeah, that's right. I'd say good on him.
Oh dear. Well, we'll be back after this break, and in a moment we'll have Phil Hoffman in to give us an insight into the man.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, at this moment we have the absolute pleasure of introducing Phil Hoffman to our show. Phil, we know him as a local identity in the travel industry, but more so we want to know what this man, Phil Hoffman, is, because we really want to get down to the bones of saying, welcome, Phil.
Thanks, Lee.
Who
Thanks,
are
Lee.
You? Where did you come from?
Well, born and bred in Adelaide, born down in the Alberton area, Port Adelaide, and went to Pennington Primary School, then Woodville High, then Adelaide University, and I taught for a period of time at a private girls' college at St. Dominic's, taught matriculation physics and chem for 3 years, and then came a tutor at the University of Adelaide. And I was going to go and do a higher degree, and a professor asked me whether I, you know, loved chemistry and that. And I said, look, I don't know, can't say whether I love it, Prof. And he said, well, go and find your passion, go out and do something. So I taught for a while, a period of time. And then I came a senior lecturer in staff development at TAFE. And the travel industry asked me to put together, or help them put together, a travel course for the industry, because it didn't have a formal travel course, travel qualifications. So I got involved in that way, and at the same time I was doing some management work for a Swiss company called Stuart Moffat Travel in Adelaide. They asked me to find a manager for the Adelaide operation, and after looking around, I turned around and I said, I'd like to do it.
You're the man.
And they said, but you wouldn't give up your full-time government job to come across this. Yes, I would. Give me a go. And that was 3 years later before I went back and got my books from TAFE.
So just going back to your teaching, though, you taught high school?
I taught, yeah, matriculation, physics and chem at St. Dominic's Priory College. So I was preparing the students for entry to university. And I love teaching. I mean, this is the interesting thing. People say, oh, did you get out of teaching because you didn't like it? I said, I actually loved it. You know, I enjoyed teaching. I enjoyed the subjects that I was teaching, but a door opened and a professor came visiting the college one day and talked to me about going to do a higher degree, and I started working towards that. But I knew my heart wasn't there. I knew I wasn't going to, you know, finish up a university professor. I think I wanted other things, and I'd come from a family of a commercial family, so I think the commercial life inside DNA was still, it was in there wanting to come out. And so when the opportunity came to run my own travel business or for a company, I took the opportunity to step out and say, well, okay, let's see whether I can do it. And I worked for this Swiss company, Stuart Moffat Travel, for 10 years. We got bought out by Coles Myer Ansett, and I lasted about 20 minutes and made up my mind that it was time to go and do my own thing, because I just felt they didn't have the respect for South Australia as an Adelaide operation. And I thought, well, you know, I was 43, 44, and if I don't do it then, I'll never do it. And so I started Phil Hoffman Travel at Glenelg in September 1990 with two staff and myself.
Mm. I would suggest, Phil,
26 years ago.
That your teaching background, I think, would be invaluable when it comes to training staff, because really I think that's the key to,
absolutely,
to running business.
And I've never lost sight of that. You know, that's been, I think, the biggest driver. You're only as good as all your staff and how they perform and in the different locations and that. And I knew that, you know, if you don't train your staff, and it was really interesting because I then got on board the federal board of the Federation of Travel Agents, and I came very interested in training and education for that. And because I thought, you know, the industry was poorly trained or didn't have these, you know, good qualifications and training that was necessary. And I introduced a national course training thing, the program for people to, you know, lifelong education and learning with the industry. And boy, did I get some opposition from older people saying, but if we train the staff, we'll lose them. I said, well, you're going to lose them anyway. And that was the bit of the attitude that existed for people that hadn't been, you know, and I just saw that, you know, the future lied in having good staff. And so I pushed that, and I've always pushed that in my office. And so much so now that, you know, we have three full-time training staff members at Phil Hoffman Travel at Glenelg that are training our staff all the time.
Okay. And also, don't you, also before they even come to you, want them to go elsewhere and get other education before they walk in the door?
Yeah. Before we take them on, we ask them to do either the TAFE training course in the Certificate 2 and 3 in travel and tourism. And also we had one industry one, which was called the AFTA Travelling in College as well, and that was a 6 months full time. So, yeah, we've always been insistent on that, because the industry is so busy now, and you don't have the time to do those initial, you know, qualification training, you know, for your
the
staff.
The groundwork.
The groundwork. Yeah, yeah. But once you get them, you can then sort of put your experience on with them and then teach them the things that you do, you believe in as far as your culture is concerned and where the company is going, the areas that are specialisation that we do and all that sort of thing. So it was a requirement for everyone to do it. And, you know, my CEO now is Peter Williams, and Peter's been with me now 23 years, and he went around the world for 8.5 months. He'd done a university degree but didn't like it, went around, travelled the world for 8.5 months, came back, and he said, look, I'd love to do travel. And I said, well, I won't look at you until you do the course, which he did for 6 months. And then he started working the weekends for us, you know, to blaze a trail for us on Saturdays and Sundays. And they grew, there was three of them. It was Wayne Stringer, the footballer, there was Peter and another young lady, and they blazed a trail for us down at Glenelg for opening Saturday and Sunday full bore. And that really set them on their road, and they became great consultants very quickly, because when you're there on Sunday, you're on your own, and Saturday you're nearly on your own without the full backing of all the other...
No one to fall back
fall
on.
Fall back on. So, you know, you got to sink or swim. And so that was great training for them, and that's what we you know. So our training has always been for first and foremost in our business, and all the time we're sending our staff away overseas so they get that personal experience. You know, most of them would get 2 to 3 trips a year where they're going overseas to different destinations to learn all about what.
Is this part of their package as an employee?
Well,
how does that generally work?
No, we just generally do it. We're very strong on believing that, you know, the more you can get them away, the more they can travel, the more experience they have, and if they don't do it, then they're not growing themselves as individuals as well as far as travellers is concerned. So it's an important thing for us to make sure that they've got that experience. Mm.
You put a lot of effort in with your staff, but we want to hear a bit more about you after this break. Hi, you're with Evie and Lee here on Hills Radio 88.9 FM, and we're speaking with none other than Phil Hoffman. Phil Hoffman the man, not Phil Hoffman the travel agent. But I do want to say at this point, Phil, you've won 10 national awards, being the national best travel agent in Australia 10 times. I've got to give you the accolades for that.
Well, you know, again, I come back, it's having good staff and world-trained staff, and you can't do it without it. I can talk a lot, but you've got to have people that deliver it every day in the workforce at the front. And, and one of the nice things is when you hear the compliments we get from, our clients, and some have been travelling with me now for 20, 30 years, and it's lovely when you see them. I mean, one lady has done, 51 cruises with us now.
Holy moly.
It's just you build. It's just more than just business. It's friendships that you develop. And one of the things I love traveling when I take a group away is that friendships you make with people when you travel with them, and they're lasting. You know, they're fantastic.
That's a really terrific thing, because I was thinking about. I mean, there's the pressure now with all the internet going on, but you can do all the chasing up on the internet for travel you like, but you're not going to get the personal service. You're not going to get the personal advice. And what you're just saying here now is the peace and comfort that somebody gets when they travel.
Absolutely. And one of the things we've backed that up with, Lee, is we have a 24/7. So anyone on our trips anywhere in the world can ring in, and we'll have people that will go into action. And I think
I've used that
to get Graham back that had to be back. And you know, you can hit brick walls because you're over there and you're in a line of 400 people. You know, when Qantas grounded those aircraft, you know, we had 190 people stranded all over the world. And by the time we got the message and I went back into the office, we had 12 people just ringing every one of those people to make sure that we could either get them on another flight with a different airline or whatever to get them home. So we were in contact. When September 11, 2001 happened with the towers,
wow,
we had 9 commercial directors from Adelaide companies stranded in New York. Again, contact straight into them. And when anything happens with a disaster in the air or wherever, bombing or whatever, any terrorism attack, immediately we can go into our computers and get a printout and find out where every one of our clients are and contact, whether next of kin, to say everything's okay, we know where they are, there's, you know, this or that. Same with corporate companies now. They want us to be able to provide duty of care. Internet can't do that.
No, exactly.
It was a good question you asked, because in 95 I spoke at an international conference about internet coming, but I said I still think, you know, we'll be around 20, 30 years later. And when that happened, it was 95, 96, I think I had the one one office at Glenelg, probably 10 or 15 staff. I now have over 200 staff, 10 offices. So as much as the internet's come in and people do a lot of homework on it, you know, we haven't let it stop us because we think we give that personal touch. And having been to a lot of these destinations that people are looking to go, you know, we can offer the best advice. And I always remember Des Cahern used to write for the advertiser on the front page. And I met him one night at a function. I'd never met him before. And I said, Des, how long does it take you to write that article every day for the advertiser? He said, Phil, about 30 years. And I think that's what it's all about. It's the experience that you have in your business, knowing your destinations, and knowing the best combinations. And you asked me about, do we have other contacts? We work with some of the best operators around the world that look after our clients when they arrive. So it's an extension of Phil Hoffman having all these operators or hotels or airlines that we use, knowing them, knowing how we work with them and the contacts we have. And as in any business, it's all about relationships and developing those relationships over many, many years. And we all go to various conferences worldwide, not just to, you know, have a trip, but to actually, you know, reconnect with our operators that we know. We talk about business. And one of the nicest things is if anything was to go wrong, we know that our operators, because we've worked with them 25, 28, 30 years, they would go into action and make sure they fix that problem for us without the client ever knowing. And that's what I think is it's all about, is having those great contacts worldwide.
And you, Phil, you take away a lot of tours and everything. Where does Phil Hoffman go so it doesn't feel like it's his job?
Hold fast yours. Where I live? No. Look, there are times when, my wife and I and sometimes the grandchildren that we'll go to a place where we can just turn off and relax and all that. But, I'm travelling probably 12 to 14 weeks a year. So it's a busy year. So sometimes just to stay home is nice. But I also enjoy it when I'm away with people because, we have good operators. So it's not like I'm having to work, 24/7. But it's me there than being a sort of the social butterfly with people, making sure everyone enjoys themselves. And we have a lot of solo travellers, Eve, that travel with us as well. And it's nice that they may have lost their husband or whatever and they still want to travel, or vice versa. And or the husband doesn't want to travel. And we get a lot of that.
Yes, there's a lot.
Men reach a certain age and they go, no, I'd sooner play golf or go fishing or stay in the shed. But the women still got that energy and motivation to want to travel. So we provide that backup with a host or escort so that they feel comfortable. And the male or the husband will turn around and say, look, if you're going with a group and there's a host on board or there's an escort, we're happy for you to go and travel the world. And actually women are in most cases better travellers. Men might not like to hear that, but they are.
Now with the cruising,
yes,
on the river of Europe, I've heard that you have people on board that will be give company to those women that are travelling, yep, by themselves.
Absolutely. We'll put a host on, whether it's a river cruise or whether it's a ocean cruise, we'll put hosts on, and we have probably about 50, 55 hosts that work for us in terms of taking, last night I was at the office and John Reed and Di Reed, ex-Crows manager,
yep,
they were doing a handover for a group they're taking to Japan. So there's 21, 22 people going with them to Japan, and then next year John's taking one to India. So again, Patsy Blight, I could name, so many of them.
You're name dropping now.
Yeah, name dropping, yeah. But I thought, well, you
notice there are no Goodings in there.
Well, we've got to work on that. You're a busy girl. But I used to say to Graham, one day we'll get him, But no,
starting to get old and grumpy.
Yeah. But it's just that we look for people that we know that are looking to, look after people. They've got to like people, and it's the same in our job. When we're recruiting young staff and young talent. I go into the induction class and I'll look at and talk to them for an hour about the business and our vision and culture and everything else. And I'll say, I can teach technical skills, but I've got to have hunger and passion in that person for the business they're entering, because it's a very demanding industry and you've got to like people, because someone at 5:30 will ring up and say, look, can I just change my itinerary by two nights because my next door neighbour said I should have longer time here. And they just think, you just go flick on a computer and it changes everything. Well, it doesn't. There's a lot more that goes on in between all that. So therefore, you've got to love what you're doing. You've got to have that passion and knowing that, it's someone, could be someone's only trip of their lifetime, not just one year, but a lifetime trip. So you've got to have that passion, and also to want to know and keep studying in the industry, so that you do come an authority, or not authority, but you're knowledgeable on destinational stuff.
Now, Phil, we're going to have to finish up in a second, unfortunately, because I'm sure we could chat here for the rest of the afternoon. But you must have some stories that you can tell. There must be some little awkward moments that have happened.
What's the
worst? I think one of the funniest is we were coming, this is a long time ago, my early days, and we got back on the plane in Thailand on just a refueling stop. And my assistant to me, that we had a big group, and he came back and he said, "Phil, I've got some good news and some bad news." I said, "What's the bad news?" He said, "Well, we've lost a passenger." He said, "He hasn't got back on the plane." Now, that wouldn't happen today, but this time it did. And I said, "Well, what's the good news?" He said, "Wait till I tell you who it is." And this guy had been a pain for us the whole trip, coming back always late.
Yeah.
At one stage, we left him in the coach behind in the destination, and he beat us to the next hotel. So when I got back to Adelaide, his parents are waiting for him to come off the plane. I said, "I got some good news, bad." I said, "Your son's somewhere in Thailand. I'm not sure when he's coming home." Because we had all his documents, everything. So, yeah, but no, look, you know, out of all the people I've travelled, you know, I can count on one hand the number that, you know, are sort of painful. Because generally people who are going want to enjoy themselves.
It's exciting.
They're excited about it. So our job is to make sure that they get the maximum out of that holiday and they want to go again. And that's the wonderful thing of travelling is seeing some of our clients. And sometimes you get people who haven't travelled ever until they're about 60, you know, and suddenly they're retiring, whatever.
And the world's their oyster.
And they might come on a group tour and, you know, and you see them being, you know, waiting to be led everywhere. And then the next time they come to the office, they say, "Guess what? We've just booked a trip and we're going to do this, this and this, and we're doing it on our own." They go, "Wow," because you're trying to teach them what it's all about. Yeah. And once you do, they get their, what I call their travel legs, and away they go. But the excitement in them, in exploring the world, that's where I get a lot of enjoyment out of, watching people grow and expanding their world and their vision of what's out there as well. I mean, we still live, no matter what anyone asks me, we still live in the best place in the world as far as lifestyle.
We agree.
But sometimes you've got to go out to experience it. And there's some tremendous places, you know, worldwide. So, but I still love landing. And the other thing is something that you know, when you put it together, you put a tour together, say, 2 years out. You go to brochure. You market it. You sell it. And when you land back at West Beach Airport, and exactly at the time you sit in the brochure, 2 years later, you go, "Wow."
Exactly. It's the memories that you've brought for people.
Yeah.
Thank you, Phil, for coming in and sharing your story. And am I getting the idea thinking of up here in Mount Barker? Am I getting that little
well,
thought?
Well, it's a very exciting place here. And because we have an office at Victor Harbour, I often come back this way via Mount Barker. Yeah. And every time I see it, I get excited watching the growth in Mount Barker, and just walking around today is fabulous. So, I'm getting excited about it.
It's on trend for becoming the second biggest city in South Australia.
Absolutely.
So there's something for you to go home with.
Thank you very much, Eve. Thank you very much. My wife will kill me if I say that.
Well, that was a nice chat with Phil, wasn't it?
It was lovely. It was a lovely chat. He's a fascinating man, world-travelled, and I've got to say, I have used Phil Hoffman travel, and there are a couple of people I just adore, and they saved us on a couple of occasions. And the other thing is, you know, if you go through an agency, Lee, it's not just about bringing you home. Sometimes when you're over there, trouble hits.
That's right, and that's often what happens, and we know. Yep. Now, speaking of travel, I went up the Riverland on the weekend.
Wow, all that way.
Yes, all that way. In that 3 hours of travel, I probably could have gone to Bali and back, but anyway. What I can't believe, and I saw this in the paper, now, they've taken the ACCC and the fuel industry have decided that they're going to remove any apps that let us know what petrol prices are around the city. Now, I don't know who's decided that we can't have an app to tell us. If we want to have an app that tells us what the petrol price is around the city, I don't think it's got anything to do with the fuel industry, nor has it got anything to do with the ACCC.
Is it just here in South Australia?
I believe it's here in South Australia. In Queensland, they've actually outlawed the fact that they can stop us doing this.
That's bizarre.
Now, I went up to the Riverland. It's $1.02. It's $1.02 at Truro. It's $1.02 at Renmark. I come back to town here, it's $1.29. I come up to Mount Barker here, it's $1.29. What's going on?
That's, I don't know.
Why are we paying 27 cents more a litre for fuel? I'm talking unleaded now. 27 cents a litre more in Adelaide, Mount Barker than what we are if you go out into the country. It stinks to me.
So, me being silly, I'm just going to be silly for a minute.
Yeah, okay.
Given the trucks, if they're coming through New South Wales, don't you come through Renmark and you could drop it off along the way and save a couple of biggies? I have no idea where they bring it from. Where do they bring it from? Because that's the only thing I can think
of.
Well,
we used to have the Port Stanvac refinery, but we don't anymore, so I guess it's all coming from interstate.
And that's what, yeah, but again, it's the drop-off points, isn't it? But surely if you do a loop, you can, what you get on the down, you get on the up.
Oh, yeah, look, I don't think there should be any difference in prices anywhere. That's what it basically comes down to, unless you get out in places, remote places like...
Coober Pedy or something.
Yeah, I know you're paying for it out there.
Yeah, well, that's understandable.
Yeah, but on this general run around the sort of the coastline of Australia, yeah, we shouldn't be paying anything more for petrol.
Especially, as you said, in the country. Where did you go in the Riverland?
What's scratching my blackboard, Evie, is we're being manipulated. I don't like being manipulated.
Wow.
Now, you asked me, what was I going to the Riverland for?
I want to go back to your manipulations. You get really irate, don't you, when someone's trying to push your buttons and you can't push back, eh?
No, I just don't think it's... I don't think it's right. We're getting ripped off. As people, we're all getting ripped off. Now, sorry.
What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? Get out on the balcony and yell it out.
Well, I'm yelling it out over the radio here because someone will hear what I'm saying and they're going to say it to someone else.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
It'll fall on deaf ears. Now, tell me, where'd you go in the Riverland? I love the Riverland.
Oh, we went at Renmark and you're very familiar with Renmark,
yeah,
I know.
It.
And it was a terrific time. The weather was lovely. Stayed in the retirement village there.
You stayed in the retirement village?
I have.
Do you have to tell me something? Have you been lying?
Yeah, I know. I've got a friend who owns the retirement village and they've got a spare place there to stay. So we pull in there. The people there are absolutely lovely that are around the place. And I must say I feel good when I'm walking around like a little kid in comparison.
You're feeling a little bit sprightly.
Yeah, so if anyone in the Riverland is getting this feed, hello.
Was there anything special, like... Are they, you know, do you dine out? Do you party? What are you doing?
Well, we actually had a function to go to a 50th, which was really nice. And the reason we're up there is my partner's daughter, Britt's, with the ABC radio working there at the moment. So she's got 4 months stint, which is really nice. The interesting thing, though, we went to get breakfast. So we thought rather than stay in Renmark, we'll go to Berry. So we drove over to Berry. Do you realise at 10:30 in the morning in Berry, you cannot buy a coffee? And there was nowhere to get breakfast. Now, this is Berry. This is a tourism. I should have spoken to Phil about this, had him do something about it.
He might be listening, Phil. Yeah.
You can't get a coffee or breakfast. We end up going to Loxton and we found one place there that served coffee and breakfast.
Why wouldn't you have gone to the golf club?
Oh, look, we could have gone anywhere, but we thought we'd support the Riverland, do the touristy thing, rather than just stay in
Renmark. Well, you did the wrong thing by yourself, didn't you?
As it turns out. But yes, the golf club there is a terrific place, the country club in Renmark.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, we've stayed those over the years because we've got family in Renmark.
Yes.
And, and I've loved the river. I love leaving from Renmark and going on river trips as well. Had a lot of stories about that. Now, talking about travel, Lee.
Yes.
And travelling on the roads. I had an ambulance come up. I was travelling along and it's a three-lane, you know, road. And you're at the traffic lights, or people were in front of me.
Yes.
And it was a red light. Now, we're all moving aside. What do you think is the rule when you hit a traffic light, it's red, and there's an ambulance coming up behind you? Do you stay and wait for the green, or do you go through it? If it's safe, I'm saying.
I thought you stayed.
No, you actually go.
Do you?
Yeah, apparently. Right. I would have stayed, and they all stayed. But apparently what the correct thing to do, and the rule is you must move out of the way of an emergency vehicle despite any other road rule, but safety first. See, yes. I didn't know that.
And
they're sitting there and stuff. And then I thought, well, what about if you're on the other side and you hear the ambulance coming, say you're on the left and they're on the right? And I thought, well, do you pull over? Because you're supposed to pull over to 25 kilometres per hour.
Yes.
When there's an ambulance. So I wasn't really aware of that rule either. So if there's an ambulance coming towards you and you're travelling in the other direction.
Yeah.
Would you pull over or would you keep going?
Well, I think you'd keep your eye on the road, but
You'd keep going.
Well, no, if there's just a white line in between you, I would slow down to pull over a bit.
Yeah, well...
Now, I wouldn't generally think I'd have to slow down to 25 because there's plenty of room on that other side of the road.
Yeah.
But it sounds like I'm wrong.
No, you're right. You're right about the white painted line.
Yes.
Or no line. You have to pull over and you have to travel at about 25.
Right.
And pull over and let them go through.
Mm.
But if there's an island or what do you call it? It's not an island. The medium strip. If it's a medium strip, even if it's just painted.
Yes.
You ignore it and you keep going.
So
which I find really quite bizarre.
Well, it's but maybe.
Well, if you've got a medium strip that's got a hump in it, I get it. But if it's just painted, how is it just because it's a wide medium strip paint instead of a white line, why wouldn't you pull over?
Well, I guess it's a common sense approach, isn't it, at that point? Well, what I'm interested to find out, so you've spoken about ambulance. Do you think that also applies to police with sirens on and fire brigades with sirens on?
Yeah, all those sort
all
of
emergency vehicles.
Yeah, all emergency vehicles. That stands for both of
what
them.
What if someone's pregnant and they're making a wailing sound coming from the car as they're driving down the road ready to try and get to the hospital on time? Would you pull over for that vehicle?
I was probably the one that was wailing. And it certainly is the voice of the Adelaide Hills, 88.9 FM. We're just waving goodbye to our boss, Chris Carpenter, who works very hard. And you know what? He was really kind to us today. He gave us a coffee.
From the Gawler Street Cafe.
Yep.
And it was a lovely coffee too. Thank you.
And Dylan, who does the funk, which means he plays great music between 2 and 4 before we come on.
Yeah, in fact, you can get funked down at the Gawler Street Cafe all through the day. They play terrific music, don't they?
Yeah, he's got... Yeah, well, we could add to it. I think we should say to Dylan, we have our own song list.
Our own style?
Yes.
I'm not sure it'll fit the funk.
Now, Lee... What do you think about this? There's an 18-year-old woman from Carinthia, from Austria.
Mm-hmm.
She's suing her parents over their posting of 500 images of her without her consent. We're talking baby pictures and pictures from her past.
Mm.
And the images were shared with her parents' 700 Facebook friends. I don't have 700. Do you have 700 Facebook friends?
No, I've got 7,000. But... why do you look like that?
Because there wasn't a kind word about to come out.
Well, the thing is about Facebook, of course, is that you can put them on, and it's quite valid for a person to put on pictures of their children. I've got friends of mine that have just had a grandchild. I reckon there's about 5,000 pictures on there in the first 3 months.
Well, they're going to have to rethink it. They're going to have to rethink it because what she's complaining about, that there was no due care with what pictures they put up. And there's no shame and no limit because now she's 18 and she says there's ones of her sitting on the toilet or laying naked in my cot. And she said, you know, every stage was photographed and then made public. So she's seeking financial compensation and wants the photos to be removed. Well, her parents won't remove them and her father, in fact, has said he has the rights to the photos because he actually took them.
The other thing that's interesting is why is she seeking financial compensation? How does that help the fact that they're on there? What they should be done is sort the fact they've got to get taken off, not financial compensation. That doesn't do anything. How does that satisfy her privacy?
Well, maybe she's thinking if she hits Dad's hip pocket...
He'll take him off.
He'd take him off. So it's a blackmail situation, isn't it?
Probably is. And to be fair, or to say for those that don't know Facebook, it's a social media, internet extravaganza that we all know about. You can put photos on there for everybody to see, including your friends that you've engaged on Facebook. The person that puts the photograph on has to be the one that takes it off.
Yeah, you've got no option.
No.
So that poor girl can't take any off.
That's right.
And how many photos do you reckon an average parent shares of a child before they turn 5?
200?
1,500.
Oh, really?
That's how crazy parents are about putting pictures up all the time.
Yeah, well, we're pretty proud. You think of your first child, and I'll go on to say second, third, fourth and fifth, but
I thought you had only two. Did you not know?
No. What I'm saying. Yeah. Anyway. I'm just trying to make the second, third and fourth not seem as though they aren't important.
But the photos do get less.
Your first, they do.
It's
they
horrible.
Do.
Your guilt start. Why come I haven't got a photo of them?
But you do. You're that excited. You put everything up. You think that the whole world wants to see your little monkey.
But the thing is, photo albums did that. Like I've got lots of pictures and I've got them in photo albums and I can dust them off anytime I want. And I don't have to share them with all these Facebook people. Now, most of the ones I've got are people I'm actually know of or I'm comfortable with. I think the more Facebook friends you've got and you start getting into the thousands and accept them, you don't know who is looking and who is...
That's true.
Doing untoward
That's
stuff.
True.
So, but apparently Facebook's policy is you can't share photos of children. No, there's no policy. You can share as many photos of children you want, but it does require users to be at least 13 years of age before creating a profile.
Yes.
As if kids can't create a profile. Look, you know, seriously, anyone can create a profile at any age these days.
Oh, they do.
It takes
you don't
nothing.
Know. They just tick a different box. That's
you just lie, don't you? You know, this new modern fandangled world of
this whole thing of privacy is pretty interesting with kids. They seem to be quite happy to share their privacy, share their details when it comes to Facebook. Oh, yes, here's my phone number, here's my email address, here's this and this. But when it comes to other forms of privacy, suddenly, oh, I want to be in my room alone. Please give me some privacy. This is a whole different range. The other thing I was going to bring up, Snapchat. People think that Snapchat, one of these new ones where you just send a photograph, is safe because they get to see the photo and then it disappears. But because of these new screenshot photo abilities that phones have, they can get your Snapchat, take a photo of it, and then they can put it on Facebook themselves. So don't think that your privacy is protected.
Well, this is still, like you tick all these privacy things and they just happen, but I really like what you just said, that they put their whole life on Facebook and then you say, oh, how was your day? Grumble, grumble.
Do you know this Google Sweepstakes Lottery Award came through to me on my email? All my problems were over, Evie.
So what happened?
I got an email saying, congratulations, we're happily announcing that you have won $1.5 million from a Canadian site. All you have to do is quote this number as you send it back. And it turns out it's from a Johannesburg location file. Ladies and gentlemen, these are not real. The reason we're bringing them up, most people understand they're not real, but they are the vulnerable and the unsuspecting out there. I think there's a thing going around at the moment. You have not won $1.5 million. I got a text on my phone saying, Jake has sent you $1,458. Click here to accept. And I've got a website address. It is not real.
And you don't know any Jakes.
Well, the number is +45 78. That is not a phone number.
Goodness.
The other one I got sent through on another email address that I have to say that I've been on websites that are illegal, and this is from the federal police.
Oh, I've heard about these ones. Scare you, don't they?
Yes, and if I want to pay this fine in advance, they'll stop all proceedings, and it's just a $300 fine or something like that. Get onto this website and pay your fine. But if you read more closely, there's spelling errors all through it. There's grammar errors all through it as well. It's clearly not from an Australian and it's clearly not from a federal police. These are all fake. Please don't get tied in.
Is there a scam too? Wasn't there a scam, or it was actually they did get into your computer and they said you'd have to pay them or they're going to shut everything down?
Yes.
Do you remember that scam as well?
That's still going too.
Is it?
Yeah.
There's
too many scams.
Isn't that awful?
But everybody thinks that here's an easy way. Oh, thank goodness I've won $1.5 million.
Well,
can't remember buying the ticket.
I remember getting one on the phone and I went, oh, I'm so excited. And I'm sitting there going, okay, when did you ever buy that? Like, you know, you know, don't you? But as you said, it's more the vulnerable people.
And we hear about it. I've seen on 60 Minutes and where people think it's real, you know, so it's not.
No, 60 Minutes in trouble again, aren't they? After it's been shown that they paid that young woman that scammed everyone with having cancer, saying she had cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And they paid her $75,000 for her story. They didn't go light on her. They were tough on her, but it's still $75,000.
Yeah.
So, and she was wicked. Like, you know, to make up those stories and say she was cured by all these other means. And why, you know, you're paying her a reward for doing that. They're still in the poop over that other thing.
Yeah.
You know, the one from overseas.
Yeah, their integrity is suffering at the moment.
It is.
One little quick one. There's a person I know had been caught with one of these scam charity sites.
Oh, dear.
I also know a relation to the family has set up a restaurant where they're giving charity money to overseas help. Same family, same problems, but nobody knows. I think check your charities when you give money to
Absolutely.
Charities.
Absolutely. You have to really research them because there is too many.
Yep.
There are too many and it's not hard to set up for some people. Mm. Hi, Hi, you're here with Evie and Lee coming in for the last half hour, driving you up the hill or down the hill, whichever way you go. Lee just drives me around the bend. Oh, that was tacky, wasn't it? Lee, we were talking about ghost apps the other day and vault apps.
Mm.
And I think we both went blank. And we're going, what are ghost apps? What are vault apps?
Too old.
I know. And so we've looked into it because we think it's important for people to be aware of these. There are 200 types of ghost apps, well, more than that, available to download to help your kids hide their photos and their activities online.
So it means that parents think they might be watching over their children. They think they might be responsible. But what they really don't see is what the kids are up to.
Yeah, because they've got these things called ghost apps. And the other things are called vault apps, and there are over 60 of those available. And, you know, most of these sort of apps can be freely downloaded from app stores or Google Play.
Mm.
So it's really quite interesting. And let's go with ghost apps, right? How do you know whether your child's got one? Well, you're not going to, because they look innocuous, and they're common icons. Like, you might look like a calculator, but that calculator actually is able to store photos, games, or even other apps.
And with special passwords that you can't get a hold of. And there's even some now where those special passwords, if you don't get it right, that'll take a picture of the person trying to change the password.
That's the Vault app.
Yeah.
That's how that one works. Mm. So that's really clever.
Mm.
Now, and also there's, you know how we're talking about invasion of privacy earlier?
Mm.
Some of these ones also have the ability to take secret pictures.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So there's a thing called Stealth Cam, and there's a thing called Top Secret Cam.
Mm.
And you can take secret pics by blanking the screen, so people don't realise that you're doing it.
Mm.
Because it's blanking screen. It can activate the camera by sensor motion.
And that can be, we're not talking just camera here, we can do a video of somebody
as
with a blank screen.
Wow.
And it's scary.
And you know how you always hear the click on the, you know, on the camera? It mutes the sound, so you don't even know. So, you know, unfortunately there are those unscrupulous people that will use that when you're out. You might be a person out and about having a few drinks, going to a party, whatever.
Yeah, a girl in a compromising position.
You know, or one that looks more compromising than it is.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's really dangerous. But I honestly don't know how parents can get around doing it, because there's also these hidden web browsers that are out there. Well, you know,
into the dark web.
That's just evil.
Yeah.
So we go back to invasion of privacy. Now, kids might be aware that there are laws now for invasion of privacy, and you might take a picture of someone with them totally not knowing. They can sue you, like we were speaking about.
As we were before.
Yeah, about that young lady that she knows her parents took the photos of her, because there's proof of it. So I don't know how you get around all these new sort of things and codes and passes. I honestly can't see
how you can you can't see it from the icon as you said. So you know what's the chances you're going to go through your child's phone and say, tell me what each of those are about, because they can actually have blocks on them that you can't do anything anyway. You were talking about the invasion of privacy thing. There's one now where you can put the phone in a cupboard, say. And unless there's a voice activated, this thing will basically go into shutdown mode. As soon as a voice is activated, this thing will start recording. So you could put that in your child's room. A child could put that in the parents' room. Now these have dangerous implications when you're dealing with this. So I don't know what the responsibility. What we're getting back to here is, what's the responsibility of the app?
The companies that are producing it.
And really, what is it, iTunes and Androids, they're the ones that are basically recommending these apps.
Yeah, and they're free. They're free.
Yes.
What do they get out of them if they're getting them, allowing that download for free?
Oh, well, you put ads on it.
Oh,
gosh. That's why the free apps can go ahead. I think recording phone conversations. There's one that's got self-destruction messaging. So you can message your friends. The moment you've read it, it'll self-destruct. So no one can ever check what you've done.
And so you could bully someone.
Oh, absolutely.
And send something rubbishy to them, and it blows up when they get after they've read it. I feel like Mission Impossible those days have taken it a bit far, haven't they?
Well, I guess if you've dreamed up that, then it can be produced.
But see, we're sort of saying there's that sort of side of it. But not all kids are going to use it for nefarious purposes, are they?
That's a good word, nefarious, isn't it?
It's a good one. You know what else I like? Oh, what is it?
Ice cream?
No, that word from Law and Order when they go kabong and it's a certain word, heinous.
Oh, heinous.
I love the word heinous.
It is.
Nefarious is a great word. Mm. You know, the heinous, it's the OUSs. Mind your mouse sort of falls off.
Or moose.
Moose. Moose. If that's your moose, I'd hate to see your cat.
Thank you, Robbie Burns.
That was terrible, wasn't it? Anyway, there are kids that don't use them for wrong purposes. And for some, it's a second layer of security so that anyone hacks into their phone at school or tries to use it for cyberbullying, they have to get past that code and that vault and everything. So like everything on this planet, there's the good for using stuff and then you can use it for the wrong reasons. And unfortunately with IT, there's a lot more of the... I'm starting to feel there's more negatives coming through than positive. You know, if we forget about the fact that we're getting obese and we're forgetting about the fact that kids are losing the art of conversation and you forget about that people bully everyone, there's a nice little bit where you can communicate on a good level, but the rest of it is all a bit out there, don't you think?
Well, I think people, deep down always, we've liked to be naughty. Everyone wants to be naughty in some way.
But not hurtful.
It's our dirty little secret as people. Yeah, we shouldn't be hurtful to other people, but still we like to be a little bit naughty.
Gee, I bet you those there are little magazines in those calculators. Young fellas, you know, because you're not going to go to the shops and buy the naughty books, are you?
Oh, no.
So you can hide it in these vaults.
Oh, hey, look, the net's full of that stuff. And what did they say in the paper over the weekend? They looked up a cartoon site and up come porn.
Well,
But it's under every name.
But, well, it is. They were talking about young kids in preschool looking up autumn, the weather, right?
Right.
The season of autumn. They said they nearly had a heart attack, these teachers. All of a sudden all these porn sites came up and autumn's doing this and there was sexy autumn with the big
name.
Bazookas and it was the children are sitting there and their little eyes are popping out going, what are we seeing here?
Wow, so, I haven't thought to look up that one. Evie, we were chatting last week about the Paralympics and it is finished now, very, very unfortunately and sadly. I just absolutely love watching it. And we should say, for anyone that's listened to the show and wants to hear it again, our Evie and Lee podcast site, you can actually listen to all of our shows. So you can go back, listen to last week. You can go back, listen to this week if you thought it was that interesting.
And there was the Paralympics last week? We
did have a little chat about them, but they're so gracious. It's just terrific watching them. I enjoy the Paralympics, to tell the truth, more than the Olympics.
Yeah.
And it once again, it took me to watch it this time to remember that. But to watch the Steelers beat the USA in the rugby and they won in double overtime, it was just incredible. It was just incredible. I could watch that. Like, as well as I watch AFL footy, I could sit and watch wheelchair rugby.
How do you
rugby.
Yawn? Because I can't do it.
That is disrespectful.
I can't do it like you, though. You do a great yawn. Maybe I'll give you better material.
Don't you? don't you like the Paralympics?
I love the Paralympics. It's when you started talking about the Steelers and whatever they do, the rugby.
They're the Australian wheelchair rugby team.
Oh, I didn't realise that. I thought we went to NBA or NFL or something.
No. I'm talking Australian wheelchair rugby.
I've never heard of the Steelers.
Well, get with the program, babe.
I apologise to you, Steelers. I don't know why suddenly thought he's over in America watching some boring thing over there.
Yeah, we played the US team, which we haven't beat before.
And we beat them.
And we beat them in double overtime by a point.
Now I'm excited.
And, well, check it on YouTube. It was actually the last second because the guy that took the ball that could have won it for the Americans or at least drawn it at the end of double overtime.
Yep.
His wheel was just slightly over the line, which fouled him.
Fouled him.
And that gave the Australians the win.
Gee,
unbelievable.
That'd be tough going backwards and forwards in your wheelchairs, wouldn't it?
We say that because we couldn't do it.
Exactly.
They can do it, and that's what they do. So,
and the speed would be amazing.
Oh, they're amazing. They're really amazing.
And so give them accolades again, since I got it all wrong.
They're called the Steelers, so that's the Australian wheelchair rugby team.
Yeah.
Paralympic wheelchair rugby team.
Okay, so we're talking rugby, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Good on them. Yeah. Good on them. So, I don't know why I went to basketball and Steelers or something in America. As soon as I heard that word Steelers, I went to America. See, there's something in a name. Idiot's probably the best one for me at the moment. Listen, I'm very excited because there is a new teddy bear in town.
I can see you would be.
It's teddy bear bees.
Have you ever
heard of teddy bear bees?
No.
Never heard of them. They're the ones that buzz.
Of course.
No, but not all bees buzz. The teddy bear buzzes, the honey bee does not. Did you not know that?
You're telling me a honey bee does not buzz?
Doesn't buzz.
What buzzes then?
The teddy bear one. It makes a buzzing noise.
Oh, actually, a bumblebee makes a buzzing noise too.
Yeah, so they're different.
But we don't have bumblebees here. Well, so this is a special type of bee.
Yeah, he's the teddy bear. Look at him. I'm just going to show Lee everybody his little hairy thing from the paper today. But isn't he cute? He's got all those little hairs.
Just describe that. That is a little hairy bee.
He's still describing the picture. Did you know there's over 1,200 new species in the last 7 years that Australian scientists have found that we were unaware were in biodiversity?
Oh, so they live here.
They're in the Roxby Downs.
Never heard of that. Never knew that.
But you know what got me to thinking? I did think.
Oh,
occasionally that happens.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's honey. I've always laughed and said honey comes out of a bee's bottom, right? I've always made that silly joke.
Yes.
And I know that's wrong. So I thought I'm going to find out. It's worse. I think it's worse. I thought, how is honey made, right? Yeah. Do you know how it's made?
It comes from their feet.
No, their
little legs. There's little things on their legs.
What, they carry them in tubs? No, it's not how they do it. If I describe it, you may never ever have honey again.
Hang on. Just before you start here, just think very clearly. Mr. Ed is not a zebra.
No. This one's real. I actually looked up a children's site so I could understand it. Now, you know bees go to flowers, right?
Yes.
And they suck out the nectar with their tongues. I didn't even know they had a tongue.
All right.
So they go... Right?
Yes.
Up goes the honey.
That's
right?
The noise I've been hearing.
That's when we go out to dinner. And they store it in their honey stomach. They've got two stomachs. One's got a honey stomach and one is a food stomach.
Okay.
See, you're learning something here, aren't you?
I am.
Now this is where I started grossing out. So when they're full, when that honey tummy's full, they fly back to the hive. Okay. So they've come in. Then they pass it on through their mouths.
They regurgitate it.
So, in other words, they've vomited it up, basically, haven't they? They've gone...
I prefer regurgitation.
Straight into the mouth of another bee.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yep.
So, there's your honey. Then they sort of pass it on. Then that bee has to chew it for about half an hour. When he's finished chewing it, he then passes it on to another bee. And they keep chewing between themselves, and it's almost like French kissing.
I can see the Mr. Ed Zebra story.
No, this is serious.
It's opening up before me.
No, this is exactly how it's made. And so they pass it on.
I'm Mr. Ed.
I looked it up properly. And they pass it on from bee to bee until it gradually turns into honey. And then that last bee then goes and puts it into the honeycomb cells, you know, the cells. And the cells are like little pots, you know, like the
honey pots.
They're like little tiny jars made of wax. And because it's still wet, they fan it with the wings to dry it out. And then so it becomes more sticky. Then they seal it with the wax lid. And that's where you get those honeycombs from. But now that you know how it's made, are you that interested in having honey?
I think it's absolutely
like
fascinating, apart from the fact I want to look this up now.
You are going to look it up because I looked it up and I went, wow. And it takes 8 bees all their life to make 1 single teaspoonful. 8 bees all their life.
How long does a bee live for?
Well, it depends on whether you've hit it or it's kept going.
That's cruel. It's cruel to a Buddhist.
It's a true thing. People, unfortunately, freak out when they see bees and do mean things.
Yeah, they do.
They do. I freak out. I don't do mean things. I run the other way.
Do you realise chickens dream in colour?
Yeah, you've spoke to a chicken. You know, yeah. And what does a goat do? Read the paper on Sundays. Anyway, that's it. I've got to say goodbye now. I hope you enjoyed the show. And it's true about the bees. And Lee can look it up and clarify that whenever he wants.
I'll report back.
You will report back. No, it's true. I looked it up in the kids department of Google. Anyway, everyone have a wonderful week. Enjoy the days ahead and stay dry.
Bye for now.